specifically that one. Letting go of all tension from the muscles of the body. Letting go of all tension from the mind. Letting go of all thoughts of the past and the future. I stabilize myself in the present moment. Sitting here in this room on this chair. I turn my attention inwards, going deep within myself. Deep within to the center of my being. I can hear the sounds of this physical world coming from around me. I accept them as a part of reality. Not distracted, not disturbed. Just the field of reality in which I exist. But I focus my attention away from all these external experiences. And I focus my attention within on the deep inner silence. I feel my entire existence concentrating, converging into a point. A point of light, a spark of infinity. It's as though this physical body and the physical world has disappeared. It is there. But deep inside, I experience as though it has disappeared. All that remains is the spirit, the soul, a sparkling star. A sparkling diamond. Invisible. Indivisible. Indestructible. That energy which was before this body was. which will be after this body is no more. I listen to the deep silence of the spirit. Free from all pull of this physical existence. I see myself in a world of light. And I see myself in the presence of God. In the presence of the Supreme. Another point source of infinite peace. Infinite purity. Unconditional love. Deep healing silence. The eternal spirit. And bathing in the healing light of the Supreme. Two sparks of eternity. Deep, silent communion. I rest. All other thoughts suspended. The mind stabilized in this single thought. That I, the eternal spirit, am united with the Supreme. Holding on to this deep silence, feeling the power. feeling the power of the union between the soul and God. Feeling the deep contentment, fullness of this union. I allow myself to return back to this field of action, back to this body, this physical costume of mine, this costume through which I play my part in this drama of life. I, the soul, the eternal spirit. Sparkling like a star in the center of the brain, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. Spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. At peace with myself. At peace with the world. So welcome once again. So when you meditate and when you hear sounds from around you, do you get disturbed?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. That means we are not meditating. See, in Raj Yoga we have a very clear understanding of when we are meditating and when we are not meditating. If there are sounds around us and we get disturbed, that means we are not meditating. That is not meditation. When we are listening to something, someone else is saying something and we are listening to that, and obviously then we get disturbed because the sounds are disturbing my hearing. Right? Someone is giving a talk, loud noise coming from outside, that's disturbing. Because something, I'm dependent on the physical sound waves getting into my ears and therefore I'm processing, and that's disturbing, that's blocking it. In the process of meditation, it's not a physical process. It is not a physical process. At least the way we practice it in Raja Yoga. It's an understanding. The process of meditation as we practice is built up on understanding. And when we are using understanding in meditating, there is no need for any disturbance created by any sound. So when there is a sound around us and I am getting pulled by that sound and I am getting disturbed, practice this. Tell yourself, why am I getting disturbed by the sound? It's just a sound. The whole idea behind meditation is, when we are out there in the middle of a lot of things, a lot of sensations hitting us, we should be able to maintain our calm and serenity. Meditation is a practice for that. The people walking around, if some sound comes, it's just a sound. Usually what happens is we try and create peace in the mind through force. Remove all sound, I want to be peaceful. That's not the way we can experience peace, that is suppression.
that is force. I'm using force on the mind to make it peaceful. So yes, for a short time, I will experience that peace. But because that is an imposed peace, that is a forced peace, there is no pleasure in that peace. There is no bliss in that peace. But because I hunger for peace, I like that peace. It's silent. I want to hold on to that silence for some time. But that does not really go into the depths of the soul. We cannot go into the depths of the soul through force. Impossible. It's like you turn an empty container around, push it down in a bucket of water, right? It will stay down as long as you keep it pushed down. The moment you remove it, it will spring up. Same thing with the mind. I try and I create silence through force. As long as I'm able to maintain the force by creating an atmosphere where there is no sound, nothing, so I maintain that force, yes. And the moment I remove that force, I'm back to square one. And so therefore, in the practice of meditation, it's very useful to use understanding. We can go into silence through understanding. Who am I? I'm a soul. Sounds are coming. Who is listening to these sounds? I, the soul, through this physical body, am listening to these sounds. What are these sounds about? It's sounds of people talking and walking and moving, playing loud music. Okay. But who am I? I am the spirit. I am the soul. I am a point of light. I am looking out through these eyes. I am listening through these ears. And these sounds, I am listening through these ears. But now let me turn my attention away from these sounds. Let me turn my attention towards myself. Let me turn my attention beyond and connect with the Supreme. When I use a very clear reasoning and understanding process in meditation, I can go beyond sound. I can create a very deep silence that is independent of any external physicality. And that's where I can allow myself to go deep into myself and experience that deep beauty, the deep power of being a soul. So we can practice this when we meditate. Yes? Using understanding. The whole process of Raja Yoga, of course, is based on understanding. But let us begin today's talk. Very nice. I hope this works. Yes, seems to work. Today, this month, we have been looking at the interpersonal underworld of the small group. When people come together in small group interactions, what are the underlying dynamics that govern behavior in small group interactions? We have been trying to look at it from the perspective of a very popular model of small group interactions in psychology that is called the 5OB, Fundamental Interpersonal Relationships Orientation. And we have looked at two dominant needs that emerge when people come together in groups. Today we will look at a third one. The first is we looked at the need for inclusion. The second is we looked at the need for control. And today we will speak about affection. So the idea, the understanding is when people interact in groups, in small groups typically, they all have to face these three needs. They may not be in the same order, but usually they say it comes in the same order, but at different points of time in the life of the group, some of these needs become more dominant. People focus more on them. Others become a little bit more on the, become more on the background. But they are there. They're operating all the time. But typically when people come together, the first is who is in, who is out. That is inclusion. And once we have decided who is in, who is out, then it's a question of who's going to do what? Who's going to control what? Who's going to be the boss? Who's going to be the subordinate? Who's going to listen? Who's going to tell? That is control. And then when people have been around for some time, ideally, they start to know each other better at a deeper level. Emotional bonds start forming. And then emerges the need for affection. Do people understand me? Do people care for me? Do people appreciate me? Last week we spoke about control. Today we will speak about affection. So we are looking at we will first look at the behaviors of affection. What are the behaviors that normally reflect affection? Affectionate behaviors. And then we will try and look at the feelings underlying those behaviors. Then we will try and look at the needs underlying those feelings. And then we will connect these needs to the two experiences of self that we have been speaking about from the beginning of autumn. The experience of the ego, the experience of the soul. When we looked at inclusion, the need for inclusion, we looked at the need for significance, importance. We all have that need, how that manifests. When we looked at control, we looked at the need for competence and how that manifests in different ways. Today we will look at the need behind affection. There could be many needs behind behavior that demonstrates affection. We will look at one particular need, we will come to that later. First, let's look at the behaviors that... So we are looking at a behavior that people experience in groups. Oops, very nice. Azam, there should be a marker in there in the back.
Yeah.
Would you please have a... Yes, so when we are looking at affection, we are fundamentally looking here at the behavioral aspects of affection. We will look at the other deeper aspects of feeling and needs a little later. But when we look at affection, as we have been speaking about, when we look at these behaviors, we experience them in two ways. One is wanted. We want others to demonstrate affection towards us. And the other is we express behaviors of affection towards others. And this expression or the want that I have for others to express affection towards me, or my behavior of expression of affection towards others, this particular need could be both low, it could be high. For example, some people have a very high need for expressing affection. They're very, very expressive, demonstrative, to demonstrate their affection. Some people have a very high need for wanting. I want others to express affection towards me. I want others to demonstrate it towards me. Some may have a low need to express affection. They rarely demonstrate towards others what they feel, you know, rarely they demonstrate. And some people have a low need for others expressing affection. They are quite okay. They don't want others to be all expressive. In fact, some will feel very uncomfortable when others express affection towards them. So we will try and look at how these behaviors can manifest. Let's look at the high need for affection, the high behaviors, high need for affection, and the low need for affection. Is having a high need to demonstrate and to take affection from others good? Or is it bad?
It's neither.
One of the famous lines of Confucius was, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. The truth lies in the middle, actually, he said. So very often, yeah. What about the need for taking affection, low need? I don't want affection. I don't even want to express affection. Does that necessarily mean it is bad? So let's try and look at the negative expressions of these behaviors as well as the positive expressions of these behaviors. So for example, let's look at the need for low affection. What kind of behaviors would you see in a person with a low need for affection, giving or taking affection? On the positive side, can you look at it from a positive angle? Yes?
Self-esteem.
Self-esteem. It emerges, you could say, from self-esteem, but what would be the behaviors? We're looking at the behavior. How do you identify, for example, that the person is operating from a space of a low need for affection in a positive way? There is a sense of stability. What else? Yes?
Integrity.
Sense of, what do you mean by that, integrity? Independence is what you mean, or?
Yeah, I have my own opinion.
Okay.
Sort of to support me.
Self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
Independence. I'm not dependent on others to support me in any way. Okay. So, yeah. Anything else?
Confidence.
Sense of confidence. You could say it emerges from a sense of confidence. So, you have some behaviors on the positive side as well, where the person experiences a sense of independence. You could also say there is a sense of objectivity, because you are detached. And here we don't mean detached in the sense of not caring, but detached in the sense of, you know, self-sufficient. And therefore you can see things from a distance, you are objective, you are not shaken. As you say, you can also experience some stability. What about the negative aspects of this particular behavior? Low need for affection. How would it manifest in the negative way? Any thoughts?
Loneliness.
Loneliness. They become alone, isolation. What were you saying?
Arrogance.
Arrogance, yeah. But how does that arrogance manifest itself? Arrogance can also manifest with me trying to sort of control you in many ways. But yes, of course, isolation, loneliness, anything else?
Being cold.
Being cold is what you're saying? Yeah.
Ignoring.
So you have many things, we don't have so much space. But let's look at some of these things. So, for example, loneliness, there is a sense of withdrawal from the world around us. There is, you could also say, a sense of rejection of the world around me. Okay, we will discuss these a little more a little later. Let's look at the high need for affection. So on the positive side, what can you see? What kind of behaviors would you see in a person who has this high need for affection? On the positive side. Sorry? Openness, yes. Engaged. We take responsibility.
Subjectivity.
Subjectivity in the sense of understanding is what you're saying. Subjectivity can also be a good thing.
As opposed to objectivity.
Ah, okay. So here you're more involved. So you could say maybe, are you speaking about like caring, sharing, more involved in that way? Okay. So we see behaviors like, you have behaviors like caring, supporting, affirming, being positive towards others, noticing positive things about others, affirming their goodness, sharing, intimacy. You can see these behaviors coming out, many others. What about the negative side? What kind of behaviors would you see on the negative side? Yes?
Maybe problems in the childhood.
Problems in the childhood?
Yes.
Yeah, that could be the cause. Let's not go there yet. That's a very dangerous area. Let's look at the behaviors first, and then we will look at many other things. Yes?
You could scare other people by being angry.
By being angry. Yeah, anger could, of course, come. When would anger come in when we are dealing with affection? When we don't get it, perhaps. But the expression of the behavior itself, you're expressing affection.
Yes.
So one is in the positive way, there is caring, sharing, intimacy, effect, in the sense of affirming others, supporting others. The negative expression of affection.
Demanding,
okay, yes. Clinging, cling to the others, yes.
Dominating.
Dominating would probably be more control, right? But you could say also, I suppose, that in the dominate because I want to express my affection towards you. Mm. But there is behavior of clinging.
Want to express yourself as a better person.
Yeah, and therefore you go into extremes. You could have possessiveness. You have jealousy. These all emerge, yeah, from because there are different ways of expressing affection. Jealousy is also affection. It's different from envy. They have two different roots. Very often we mix them up. But they have two very different roots. They're cousins. They go very close together. But they have two very different roots. Envy comes from desire. I see something others have. I feel envious because I want that. Jealousy comes from insecurity, attachment, fear. I have something, I'm afraid I'm going to lose it. Typically in close relationships. So my wife or my child giving more importance to another person, I feel jealous. This is not envy, this is jealousy. Because I want to hold on to this person, because of my attachment, and I believe the person's affections are moving away from me. There is the insecurity, the fear that emerges. So we can certainly experience these behaviors. So there is affection underlying that, but it can manifest as jealousy. It can manifest as possessiveness. It can manifest as clinging behavior, which is pretty similar to possessiveness and jealousy. So you're trying to express affection, but then it becomes negative. It can also take the form of dominating, sort of, how do you say that, overdoing something. There is a special word for that, sort of too much of affection, like sometimes mothers demonstrate towards their children and the children want to run away. It's too much. Suffocating, yeah, that's a good word, perhaps. Sort of suffocating. I'm suffocating you with my love. How do you suffocate with others?
It's not actually.
It's not actually. No. There is a bit of love in it.
Love's nature is not.
But there is a bit of love in it. The problem is love then gets mixed with fear and attachment, and then it emerges like that. And we can separate the two. You're right. It's not really love, but then it sort of gets mixed. So we have these aspects of the expression, and then we have these aspects of expression of the behavior of affection. It can manifest itself positively, it can manifest itself negatively. Theory says some of us have, we can see where we really fall. Typically, the negative aspects of my experiences are actually very clearly connected to a specific form the need has taken within me. Which also means the positive side is there, but the negative side is emerging because of something else that is happening inside. So typically, people who experience this might benefit by understanding how they can shift from here to actually here. People who experience this can look at how they can actually shift from here to here. But let's try and look at. So people can have a high need for affection, wanted affection. I want affection from others a lot. They can have a low need for wanted. I don't really care. No, I'm okay without it. People can have a high need for expressed affection, expressing a lot, and low. And it is very much possible that I can have a high need for expressing affection, but a low need for actually taking it. And I can have a high need for people showing affection towards me, and I can have a very low need to actually expressing it, which can become a little difficult. Because usually the wanted aspect is hidden. It is subtle. It's inside me. It's very deep. It is not always available for people outside. What people see is the expressed part. So if I don't really express much affection towards others, but inside I have the expectation, the problem is people never know that I want that affection. And so they don't demonstrate it, because usually people say, well, this person behaves like this, so maybe they expect the same thing back. So others don't demonstrate it, they get more and more frustrated because their needs are not being fulfilled. Some people express a lot, they don't really care much for it. They express a lot. When they express a lot, people think, oh, because they express so much, we should also express a lot towards them. When they express towards them, they get irritated, annoyed, they feel uncomfortable, because I don't want all that attention, I don't want all that affection. And that can again become quite complicated and difficult, especially in relationships. Of course, when people live together for a long time, they sort of start to get to know each other. It can still be problematic. But when you're looking at the life of a small group, especially work groups, it can become really complicated. Because people don't know each other that well, and yet someone has the desire, others should show appreciation, affection, caring towards me, and that doesn't happen, they get frustrated. Others have no way of knowing what the needs of this individual is, and therefore that can be quite frustrating. So, can you identify yourself where you are? High wanted affection, low wanted affection first. Ask yourself, how much do you want affection from others in interpersonal relationships? How much do you want others to demonstrate towards you? as a tiger go, or maybe somewhere in the middle. And then you can also try and connect with the typical behaviors you demonstrate in interpersonal relationships when your needs are not being met. What are the behaviors that you demonstrate? That might give you also an indication of where your needs are really. And then when we're looking at expressed affection, where are you? High on expressed or low on expressed? How much affection do you demonstrate? Do people complain around you that you don't show enough love? Or do people complain that you show just too much love? It's suffocating. It's too much. Back off a little. It's better then. Yeah? You can identify. Yes, can you identify? Yes, to some extent you can identify. All right. Let's go further. And of course, I've seen cases where you have people with this various combinations expressing affection a lot, and the moment they get affection from others, they completely withdraw. And it sends very confusing signals to the others in the group, others in the relationship, because then they feel, you know, what's wrong? What happened? It can become quite complicated. But anyway, let's go further. So we have looked at behavior. So we can have various aspects of manifestation of the behavior of affection. And according to the model that we have been following, we understand that behaviors emerge from certain feelings. These feelings emerge from certain needs. And these needs emerge from our experience of the self. How do I experience myself? So this behavior of affection, various forms of affection, especially the demonstrative affection or wanting affection, what do you suppose is the need behind that? What's the need behind that? Demonstrating affection, wanting affection? What do you think? There could be many needs, of course. I was going to say Safurli. Okay. I'm thinking in Danish a little bit now. That's a good sign. So all my Danish classes are having some good effect. So what do you suppose is the need behind affection, behaviors of affection?
Affirmation.
Affirmation. I want others to affirm me. And how do I want them to affirm me?
I'm good enough.
I need to be loved. I need to be liked. There could be many needs, but according to the model that we have been following, the understanding is the dominant need here is to be liked. Likeability. Or to be loved, whatever you want to call it. So, likeability. Now, from a psychological perspective, we can look at it in one way. From a spiritual perspective, we can look at it from a slightly different way. From a psychological perspective, you say, what's the need here, really? What's the need that is emerging? Is that I want likability from others. This is what we would say, right? I'm demonstrating affection because I want others to like me. So some people may have a high need for others to like them. Some people may have a lower need for others to like them. From a psychological perspective, you would say that. But when I have this need of taking likability or love or whatever you want to call from others, what kind of feelings will that generate in me? I am now dependent on others to be liked. I want to be liked by others. What kind of feelings will it generate? Yes?
Insecurity.
Insecurity.
Kind of the same thing.
Vulnerability.
Yeah.
Anxiety, insecurity, because I'm not sure that I'm liked by others. And I want to be liked by others, but I can never be sure whether I'm liked by others. And so there is this whole experience of, in some ways, anxiety, insecurity operating within me. And the question that I am asking myself is, do others like me, accept me, love me, informed by feelings of anxiety and insecurity? And so my behavior of affection, if I am driven from this root, my behavior of affection will be driven by egocentrism. And when it is driven by egocentrism, that is, I'm focused on the self. So I'll be very, very demonstrative. I meet you after a long time, I say, oh, it's so good to see you, it's so nice to see you. What am I trying to do behind that? Am I genuinely expressing affection and saying, it's so good to see you? Or am I saying, see, I love you so much, now you have to like me. Like me back. Like me back, I'm pulling your attention towards me because I want you to like me. So when I'm saying, it's so good to see you, I'm saying, like me, like me, like me, because I'm being nice to you. Is that the motivation behind my behavior? Why is that important to understand? Why is that important to understand? What do you think?
To understand the person? I mean, if you know...
How does it matter? I have seen her after a long time.
Yes.
And so it's so nice to see you. Stay in touch. Why stay in touch? Because if you stay in touch, it's an affirmation of my self-worth. Mm-hmm. When you stay in touch with me, you send me an email, you give me a call, it shows to me in my mind that I am actually good, I am likable, people like me, that means I am good. Fine, what's wrong with that? So I give affection, I expect some affection back. What's wrong with that? Is there a problem with that?
You can be independent.
I can get dependent, no problem. I get dependent on her, she gets dependent on me. We sort of satisfy each other very, very well. Very, very happy. I'm dependent, he's dependent, both are dependent on each other. It's bliss.
You shift your center from yourself to the other.
You shift your center from yourself to the other, and what happens then?
Then you are not, you have no base to, you know, to exist.
I actually lose my self-worth. And this is where spirituality begins to come in. Otherwise, it's social exchange, right? I give some because I want some, and that's fair. So that what I want, I will give so that I can get it back in return. Fair, right? Social exchange. But from a spiritual perspective, we understand the moment I start doing that, I am moving away from myself and I lose it. Because what is happening is, then I am dependent on the others. And when I am dependent on the others, I want it from the others, then what will I do? I will go to great lengths sometimes to fulfill their needs, understand what they need. I'm monitoring my behavior all the time. And then I am giving in to being controlled by the values and standards of this world around me. And this world around me can mean also the world that is inside my head that I have taken in from my childhood. But who has taken it in? I have taken it in. Of course, as a child, I did not know better. But still, the existential responsibility is mine, right? It's easy to sit and blame my mother for it. Oh, my mother and my father. Yes, certainly, their behavior, the behavior of many others around us influence us. There is no question about that. But that is done. Now I am here in the present. What am I going to do with my life? Sit and blame the past? Who is going to gain from that? No one is going to gain from that. And yet the reality is the past has a very big impact on me. So I need to find out how do I deal with it. And sometimes I don't know I'm following these values that I've taken in from the outside. I don't even know. I feel they are mine. I remember I was speaking to a friend here in Denmark. And he was saying, you know, I'm really envious of my friends. Why are you envious of your friends? He said, you know, I have a wife, they don't have a wife. I said, okay. You have a wife, they don't have a wife. Why are you envious of them? Because they don't have a wife? He said, yeah, because you know, they can have all the fun in the world and I'm unable to have all the fun in the world. I said, so then he said, well, you know, I don't know, what are my values? I said, why are you thinking about that? He said, when I'm with my friends, I actually get tempted. So that means those are my values, right? I want to be free. So maybe it's wrong for me to be married. Because I think my values are to be free. Wonderful conclusion, isn't it? I mean, that's probably one of the reasons why people get divorced. Suddenly you realize, oh, my values are to be free. And this wife for 20 years, that's okay. Somehow it doesn't fit in with my values anymore. Another couple I know in Copenhagen. 26 years of marriage. This lady begins to see a coach. Now, I also work as a coach. But because of that, I think I'm safe to criticize him a little bit. Anyway, but not to criticize him because he's not responsible. Anyway, she started seeing a coach. And after a few sessions, she suddenly became enlightened. She obtained nirvana. And she suddenly saw the light. And the light that she saw was, oh, now I need to be on my own. I need to discover myself. And so she decided to take a break from her husband. That poor fellow, no problem, no conflict. No problem really in the relationship. But she wants to now be on her own because she wants to discover herself. And so she moves out. And she ends up in depression after a year. So what is really happening? What are values really? Are those values or is that just a temptation? Are values the same as temptation? This is something we need to understand, right? Are values the same as temptation? So anyway, when we are dependent on others, then I have various standards of the world telling me, to be light, you have to be this. To be light, you have to be this. To be light, you have to be this. And I have taken it all within me. And therefore, I am dictated by the values and standards of others. And so we speak about values that are acquired. And many a times they are in the unconscious because these are, you know, from childhood we have been rewarded for certain things, we have been punished for certain things by our parents, by our neighbors, by the society in which we live in, by the state, by various. We are introduced to various things which we are supposed to do and not supposed to do. And in different cultures it is very, 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 very different. We take it in. As a child, we begin taking all these things inside us. Over a period of time, we forget that we have taken them in. And we believe these are ours. And we start trying to follow that. Anyway, when I am following these values of the outside world, therefore I am dependent on the outside world, of course, I have the experience of dependence. And then if I lose my control, I have the experience of low self-worth. And the more the low self-worth is, the more I will try to take this experience of likability from outside. The more I take it from them, the more I will lose my self-worth because more and more I am getting dependent on others, on the external world. And the more I become dependent, the more I want it from them. The more I want it from them, the more I take it, the more I lose touch with myself. The more I want it, the more I take it, the more I lose. It becomes a very vicious cycle where I go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into this experience of the loss of my very deep experience of self-worth. And so from a spiritual perspective, we say, it doesn't matter if two people are mutually satisfying each other's needs. The problem is with the whole issue of neediness. Because through neediness, I am losing my integrity. And then I give in. And then of course, because I have lost my self-worth, I want more and more anxiety and insecurity. In my interactions with others, I am constantly monitoring. Do they like me? Do they accept me? Do they love me? And then I am trying to monitor my behavior in that way so that they can like me, they can love me, they can accept me. Or, this doesn't really work. I get frustrated. So as long as the needs are being satisfied, fine. But the needs will not always be satisfied. I get frustrated. I get angry. These are other feelings that can also be associated with this. I get frustrated. I get angry. I give up. I give up, I withdraw. I become lonely, I reject others and therefore experience rejection from others. So either I go into the other negative aspect of expression, clinging, possessiveness, suffocating them with my love because I want them to like me, or I sort of give up, I get frustrated, I give up, and then I go on to the other side, I become, you know, I just move away from the world around me, I don't want to experience it. Many people sometimes say, what's the motivation? What's the motivation I have for demonstrating affection for others if I don't expect anything from them? So if I expect something, I'm motivated to be nice to them. The deep dynamic of the mind. Observe yourself. I've observed it within me many times. There is deep evil if we can look at it. As long as we are sure we are going to get something in return, we'll be very nice, very affectionate, very caring, because at a subtle level, I'm expecting it. And when I know I'm not going to get it from this place, I withdraw. So what is happening inside me? And what am I doing to myself then? I'm losing more and more respect for myself. Because then my behavior of being nice to you is not really driven by any real love for you. It's driven by my need to fill up the emptiness inside me. And the moment I feel, I sense, oh, this person is not going to fill up that need anymore, I withdraw. And I withdraw, I lose respect for myself. Because I have gone against my deep inner values. And so this is where we move to the spiritual perspective. Why do we need to be liked by others? Why is it nice? When someone shows, appreciation towards me, I feel good. Others like me, I feel good. Self-affirmation. Why?
We don't like ourselves.
We don't like ourselves.
We're not sure about ourselves.
We're not sure about ourselves. Spiritually, we understand this very clear causal factor. If we are dependent on others liking us, the deep spiritual truth is, I don't like myself. And psychologically, very interestingly, social psychology, a lot of research in the 80s and 90s has actually started demonstrating this fact. And the fact is, the more I accept myself, the more I'm able to accept others. The more I reject myself, which is hatred for the self, the more I reject others. For a long time, people have spoken of projection, right? The inner world is projected onto the outer world. But now there is a lot of empirical, statistically tested research that is telling us the same thing. My acceptance of others, my liking of others, is directly proportional to my liking of the self. It is very clearly connected. And so many a times we demonstrate a lot of behaviors of liking others, but unless I really, really like myself, those behaviors are usually false. I have known some cases like that. I know of one girl, so expressive, so demonstrative, very caring, very loving. Anyone would come home, they would get a full meal, not just a cookie. A full meal. I used to feel sometimes this is like overdoing it, right? This is a bit too much. Others may not even want that. They, you know, it not even be practical. But she was so overflowing with so much of affection and caring. So my first impression of her was, wow, she's amazing. She's wonderful. And then I observed a very interesting change over her over time. She used to be a teacher. And she was very concerned with the students, and the students loved her because she was always, you know, so caring and affectionate, and the students loved her a lot. And then slowly, slowly, over a period of time, I noticed a very clear shift in her focus. She started becoming more and more withdrawn. And all that caring that she had towards the students was not there anymore. This happened over a period of 3-4 years. I observed this very clearly. 3-4 years. It wasn't there anymore. I was wondering, why is this happening? And when I would go to her house then, she wasn't that concerned about my stomach anymore. was wondering, this is very interesting. Why has this really happened? Why has there been this shift? And very noticeably, I could see this whole experience of withdrawal, becoming alone, withdrawing. And I ask her friends, oh, but have you spoken to her? No, she used to be very regularly in touch, but we don't hear so much from her. Her students start feeling she's become a little strange all of a sudden. What is happening inside her? After about a year, she enters a depressive episode. Very serious depression, psychotic depression. And then the whole process of analysis actually showed that the whole behavior of caring and warmth, it's not that she didn't have the value of love that was there. But the motivation behind that was, love me, love me, love me. And you go into her past, of course, you spoke of childhood, you can very clearly see some experiences of the past, some experiences in the childhood that have accumulated of rejection. Rejection from the world around me. And so I want, and the need is, I'm not liked by others, very deep feeling, I'm not liked by others. And the same girl, I remember, she used to demonstrate a lot of affection. When others would demonstrate affection towards her, she wouldn't be able to take it. She would brush it off. She'd be very, very uncomfortable with it, even before. Very, very uncomfortable with it. I used to wonder why. Someone is expressing affection towards you. Why do I need to be uncomfortable about it? I may not have the need for it. But if I'm being uncomfortable, there is something else happening there. I don't deserve the love others give me. So when they are giving it, I'm not sure whether they will give it tomorrow or the day after. Today they love me, tomorrow they will reject me. Past experience. Today they love me, tomorrow they will reject me. Before they reject me, I reject their love. I don't deserve this love. I don't want this love. This is already happening, right? So many a times it's interesting to see, if I believe I have a low need for affection from others, is it because genuinely I have a low need for affection because I am detached and independent? Or is it because of the frustration or the insecurity or the fear or the anger turned towards the self, I have moved away from the world? What is the reason behind that? Is it genuine freedom, independence, or is it a reaction to the fear and insecurity that my needs will not be met? If I have high need for affection, say demonstrating affection, where is it coming from? Is it again coming from the anxiety and insecurity and therefore suffocating behavior, doing too much? Or is it genuine affection expressed towards others coming from a very deep experience of self-respect, affirming, strengthening, supporting others? Where is it emerging from? So, we look at the other aspect of this dynamic of affection. Psychologically, you will say, well, it's all your individual needs. We understand that this experience of the self is the experience of the ego, which leads, because your ego is this identification with whatever I have grown up with. This is the ego, my I, the values, the experiences, the rewards, the punishment, the culture, the family, all this that I have taken in within me, this form, the acquired part of me. The acquired part of me is the ego. And if I'm going to follow that, there will always be insecurity and anxiety. We know that. So, can there be another motivation behind affection? What could be the other? So one is take from others.
Just be happy because the others are happy.
Just be happy. When will that happen? This is a genuine need. Don't we all need to like ourselves? Genuine need, right? We need to like ourselves. You don't need to like yourself. The dynamic is, if I don't like myself, invariably, I will try to compensate for that in some way. There is no escape from that. I will try to compensate for that in some way. Either take like from others, or forget about this whole issue of likability, and try to compensate through some other way. Work too hard, achieve a lot in the world, and try and fill up that emptiness. So there is, you know, if I don't have that experience of real, genuine likability towards the self, it will come out in some other compensatory behavior. Either doing too much on this front, or then trying to compensate for the lack of this through some other need. And so we say, from a spiritual perspective, the other need around likability is, one is I want likability from others or through various things that I do. And the other is the need of likability of the self. And how do we develop a very deep and genuine likability of the self? From a spiritual perspective, can you have any inputs on this? So one is, I develop an identity and ego. An ego identity around what I need to be liked by this world. So, I need to be conservative, I need to be liberal, I need to be Muslim, I need to be Christian, I need to, whatever, I need to dress up in a certain way to be liked by this world in which my identity is trapped. And we know there is insecurity and anxiety there because we can't always control that. So if I really want to work at a deep level of developing a likability for the self, where do I need to function from? Yes? Course. Easy answer. Soul. Because that's what I... But you're right. I mean, from... But what does it mean? What about the soul? Yes?
It's about being a witness to the ego.
When can I be a witness?
When you are in peace with yourself and your soul.
What will create that peace?
Accept awareness where we are.
Yes?
It's about
awareness. Is it as simple as that? Awareness about what? And this is where, in the practice of Raja Yoga, we say, awareness, yes. Awareness of what?
Connection with about lifestyle and also meditation.
Around what?
Our
core values is what we understand. The innate values of the soul. Am I in touch with the innate values of the soul? Otherwise, I will never be at peace. I will never be at peace. I won't be able to connect to God. It won't happen. It just won't happen. So awareness, yes. But we are looking at the values of the soul. That is the innate values. When I am focused on that, I have the experience of autonomy. Because I don't need to please the world. I don't need to please the world to be liked by the world. Free, independent, I'm autonomous. And when I can experience that autonomy, I can experience genuine self-worth because I am following what I really am. When I function from this space, I am able to develop a likability for the self. I contribute to my self-worth. The more self-worth I feel, the more self-sufficient and likability I can actually have for myself. From a spiritual perspective, we say the only way we can regain our self-worth from a sustainable perspective is I first get aware of who I am in terms of soul, yeah, in terms of values. What are my values? We speak about the seven values of the soul. Very easy. Many of you who've done the Raja Yoga course would be able to repeat this fact. Love, peace, happiness, bliss, power, purity, knowledge. There it is. All of them out in front of you. Right? How much do I experience these values at the level of feelings? How much do I live by these values in my daily activities? How much do I express and experience these values at the level of thoughts, dreams? If I go against these values, even in my dreams, that leaves a mark on the soul. It's an experience of the soul. So, but you know, that's okay. We're all there. We're all in the process of moving. But can I shift and can I really understand how I can lead my life according to these values? When I start doing that, I experience autonomy. I experience autonomy, and then what kind of feelings emerge from this? When I'm able to develop a very deep likability for the self, not a superficial likability, patting on my shoulder. Oh, I'm so good. Why am I so good? Because I could finish my work today on time. I'm so good. A likability that is dependent on performance, achievement, accomplishment, it is coming again from this source, because the world tells me to be good, you need to accomplish, you need to achieve. I'm giving into this again. I'm losing my control, and then I'm, in some ways I'm losing my sense of self-worth. And when I, the logic behind this is, so what should we do? We should not perform well? We should not achieve our goals? Should that not be a goal, to get things done on time and do them well? Should that not be our goal?
Yeah, but it should not depend on self-esteem.
That's the idea here. And the understanding is, when I'm working from a space of deep love for the self, I will fulfill all my responsibilities. Because not fulfilling those responsibilities is against the values of the soul. So I'm working from a different perspective. I'm not working from the perspective of fulfilling these responsibilities, achieving, accomplishing, and therefore pulling others' attention, or answering the voices inside my head that are telling me from the past, to be a good boy, you need to do this. I'm not following that, all those things. I'm doing this because that is who I am. Responsibility is a value of the soul that emerges from purity. This is who I am, and therefore I get it done. I will automatically get things done, and I won't be dependent on that. The old saying in many, many religious scriptures, do your work, don't wait for the fruit of your action, right? Then becomes a reality, because I don't have the neediness that makes us dependent on the fruit of our action. And so therefore, I have the feeling of stability. I have the feeling of genuine love for the self and for others. These are the feelings emerging from this. And therefore, the feeling emerging from this is, I like others, I accept others, I love others because I love myself genuinely. And therefore, this informs my affection, and we can observe, obviously, these behaviors. Here, we observe these behaviors. Here, I'm working from a space of selflessness because I don't really need anything from the world. And my needs are being satisfied with my being close to my values and living through my values. And so because there is no anxiety and insecurity operating there, there is no question of withdrawing from the world. There is no question of trying to cling on to the world. So I express, there is caring, there is supporting, there is affirmation for others. At the same time, I have this very nice balance between being independent and yet being available for the world around me. So, that's the whole thing behind affection. You know, we used to have these, some of you may know, group relations conferences. Group relations conferences are tools that were developed, by the psychoanalytical school of work psychology. What you do basically is very interesting. What you do basically is, say about 30, 40 people are participating in the conference. You bring them up into groups of 6 to 8. And then you send them off into small rooms. That's it. They're sitting in the rooms for one full week. They're sitting in those rooms. But, they go out for sleeping and eating and all that. But basically, they're sitting in those rooms. And then what happens? Because the activity is not structured, there is no clear structure in the activity, right? That gives the space for a lot of these insecurities and anxieties to emerge. And then a lot of behaviors emerge because of that. And you will find a lot of these needs actually emerging in that group. So for example, one person will always try to fill in the gap when there is a lot of silence around, he or she will start speaking. So distract attention away from the silence. Yeah? Now, is that necessarily a negative? One of the problems I have personally had at group relations conferences is there is so much of focus on the, in the Star Wars terminology, on the dark side of the force. on the negativity, on all the insecurity and the anxiety. I've had this issue with that kind of a framework. It's very useful. You can have many good insights, but it's very heavy. It becomes very heavy for some people. If they cannot handle it, I've seen some people get very, very disturbed. Because you stimulate all these anxieties and insecurities, and then what? You are insecure and anxious? Yeah, okay, fine, thanks. Now what do I do? You've told me, I've discovered I'm insecure and anxious. Now what? What do I do next? Anyway, they have their own understanding of doing that. But you do see this behavior of coming out and trying to fill in the gap. Where is it coming from? Is it coming from a genuine need, genuine desire to connect everyone? Or is it just coming from this need of, you know, this discomfort that coming from insecurity? And therefore, some way, I have to just remove that insecurity by noise, by activity, by some talk. So it gives us some interesting insights on our group behaviors. And then you can sort of superimpose this behavior in the work setting. And you actually, when you sort of question these people on those behaviors, they actually identify, they do the same thing at work. So some people, for example, are very, very attentive to others. You can observe that in these groups. Very, very attentive. Whenever anyone is speaking, they listen very nicely. They nod and say, yes.
Yes, oh, I see. Yeah, really nice. That's a good point. Yeah.
All the time they're doing that. Now, why are they doing that? Are they doing that because of a genuine desire to support, encourage the others? Or are they doing that because I show a lot of appreciation towards you, so you can like me? Now, from a psychoanalytical point of view, they would say, yeah, it's all dark and devious, and you're doing that because you want to put attention towards yourself. But somehow I feel there, somewhere, psychology lacks that understanding that that behavior of nodding, it need not all be evil. It need not be all black. The reality, as I understand it at least, is that both these aspects are functioning. They get mixed up, but both are functioning. If that person is trying to sort of cling to others and sort of try to draw their attention, the person also has the capacity to actually support and affirm and care. It's just that because of the shift in the intentions, because the person is working maybe a little more from this space, this aspect is coming out more than this aspect. And when we can explain this to people, it's such a relief for them because they know, oh, I'm not all dark and evil and, you know, I can also be this, and then they can actually shift. So a person who has high need for expressing affection but in this suffocating way can understand that there is a need in me to express affection. That's a natural part of me. I just need to shift here, that's all. But to shift here, I need to shift at a very deep level. I need to shift my feelings. For that, I need to shift the focus of my needs. For that, I need to shift the very anchor of my self-worth. And when I do that, automatically I emerge. Then I can be more and more on this side. And this is where then spirituality can add to our understanding of psychology. By showing that there is a possibility of working from a different space, which can be you, very much you. And therefore, you can bring about a shift and experience affection the way that we would actually want to experience affection. Express it. Then also accept it when others are giving it to you. Without getting uncomfortable because of the deep feeling that I'm not good enough. So I don't deserve others' affection. You see, it needs a big heart to give love. It also needs a very big heart to take love. No? The more I'm able to generate this deep likability for the self, not egotistical likability, but a very deep likability for the self, emerging from awareness, understanding of who I am deep inside, my values, if I'm able to do that, I can accept love. No problem with that. I won't be uncomfortable with any demonstration of love. I can understand maybe it's a little excessive, but I won't be uncomfortable with it. Because I know I deserve it. Not from the egotistical, I deserve it. But you don't think I deserve it. You have the strength inside, you just take it and then you share it. Okay? Any thoughts? Questions? No? Good. Very nice. Let us meditate instead. Let us meditate instead.
Once again, I separate myself from the world of the ego. The world of my responsibilities, relationships, activities. The world with which I identify myself, usually. I withdraw myself from this external world of the ego. Going deep within myself once again. Deep within to the center of my being. I experience my entire existence converging, concentrating into a point. A point of light. The center of all life. In consciousness. The soul, the spirit. The eternal me. That energy that was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. Indestructible, eternal. I am that energy. I am that light. A sparkling star. A being of light. A being of peace. Stabilized in this awareness of my eternal self. I experience this physical world and this physical body to disappear from my consciousness, fading away into the elements of nature. And all that remains is the spirit. I, the soul, independent, free, liberated. And I take my consciousness beyond this world of matter. I see myself in a world of light. And once again I see myself in the presence of God. I see him in his eternal form of light. filling me up from deep within. Giving the soul the strength to live by its values. With integrity. With generosity. As all needs are satisfied in this experience of union, communion between the soul and the Supreme. As two sparkling stars, two beings of infinity, two beings of eternity, indeed. Communion. As I rest in the light of God, I find myself returning to my original state of fullness, bliss, all needs satisfied, ready to give to the world without a thought of taking. And holding on to the light of the Supreme. And this experience of blissful silence, I allow myself to return back to the world of the physical, back to this body, this costume of mine, ready to play my role once again. I, the soul, sparkling in the center of the brain, looking out through these eyes, listening through these ears, at peace with myself, at peace with the world, Om Shanti.
Okay, tap for you.
and go off and